underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. This is an off-the-shelf edition of The Book Show in partnership with Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, and recorded before a live audience. Daniel Silva is widely acclaimed as one of the greatest spy novelists of our time. He's best known for the creation of his endlessly interesting hero, the art restorer, assassin, and spy, Gabriel Allon. Silva's latest, The Black Widow, is the 16th novel in which Gabriel has appeared. In Silva's latest, he deploys Allon to the front lines in the war against ISIS. Gabriel is poised to become the chief of Israel's secret intelligence service, but on the eve of the promotion, events conspire to lure him into the field for one final operation. ISIS has detonated a massive bomb in Paris, and a desperate French government wants Gabriel to eliminate the man responsible before he can strike again. The new novel, again, is The Black Widow, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Daniel Silva to The Book Show. My understanding from conversations with you in the past is that you start the next book very soon as you're finishing up the last book.
Very soon, because it helps me put the previous book to rest. If I can get something else going, I'm a fiddler. I fiddled on this book until the very last minute of the very last day with my editor on the phone until she finally said, that's it, no more changes, we gotta go. And that's the way I've always done it. I prefer to use every minute that is available to me to make the book as good as I can make it. And then what I really need to do is do my prep work to get ready to go out on tour, you know, think about the book for, you know, a day or two, encapsulate my views about the book, what I'm going to say about the book, and then I like to forget about it for a month and a half. And the best way to do that is to start a new book. I actually started The Black Widow, you know, right after I finished the previous book, The English Spy, and I knew I wanted to write about ISIS. At that point, ISIS had not yet gone global. Was obviously a menace in Iraq and Syria. It had carried out attacks in neighboring Turkey. It had beheaded journalists. It had infamously beheaded those Coptic Christians. But it had not yet directly attacked the West. And a lot of politicians and learned terrorism experts were dubious as to whether ISIS ever would attack the West, that maybe ISIS was going to stay focused on the near enemy rather than the far enemy, as they call it. And I thought, frankly, that they were just out of their minds, that all you had to do is listen to what ISIS was saying, read their social media feeds, read their doctrine, read their magazines. More importantly, look at their recruiting patterns, that so many European Muslims were flowing into the caliphate, becoming battle-hardened, getting trained up, and then going back to Europe. And when I looked at that, and I looked at the situation in France, I thought that Paris was likely to be the first target. I thought that a cell in neighboring Belgium would probably play a support role, because anyone who pays even the remotest attention to the situation knows that the Brussels suburb of Molenbeek was basically an ISIS safe haven. And I started to work on that. And I wrote a couple hundred pages of the book, wrote my attack sequence at the beginning, and lo and behold, in November, the thing came true. And it was so shockingly much like I had written that I really seriously considered setting the book aside, you know, writing a different book, letting some time pass, digest it, and then, you know, reignite The Black Widow. And in the end, I chose to finish it as conceived and to pretend as though the attacks of November had not yet occurred in the realm inhabited by my characters, and I chose to finish it as planned. I felt that I had something to say about ISIS, and I tell you, as I was coming to press with the book, they went on a rampage.
Right.
And so these last couple of weeks, Ramadan, it just been awful. With the climax of Nice, which we now know this was not some lone wolf. He had a support structure behind him.
So does that change what you want to say? Do you ever worry that the headlines will get in the way of what you want to say and what we as a collective audience know about the subject?
You know, I think that I am aware of the fact that my typical reader sits with the book in his hand or his or her hand and an iPad or laptop
right.
within easy reach and is Googling and checking behind me and reading things. And that's just the way we all read now. And I think that, you know, back in the days when I was reading, you know, the big international thriller in the 70s and the 80s, you know, it's a different world. Writers could take a lot more license, have a little more fun. I think 9/11 changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And terrorism, if you're going to write about terrorism, is a serious, deadly business. We are all potentially victims of it. It changes the way you, at least the way I write about it. I think you have to write seriously about it. You can't be frivolous about it. When I write an attack sequence, I don't try to be shocking or gory or anything with how I portray an attack. And I think that a thriller writer, to be effective, has to sort of look over the horizon a little bit, look around the corner. And I did look around the corner, and what I saw actually came true as I was writing and then as I was publishing.
You have done that over time, and I think of your early work, I know, as a journalist both for UPI and then later with CNN, you spent a lot of time, you lived in Cairo.
I did.
And you wrote about Cairo, and you were writing about the place devolving, and that is what happened.
Yeah, I was, I had a wonderful experience in Egypt in the late 80s, mid to late 86. Didn't start out as a wonderful experience, but it ended as one. There was a town in Egypt, El Minya,
mm-hmm.
that word sort of started filtering back to Cairo. It's down the Nile, south of Cairo, that Jamaa Ismailia, the Islamic group, the group that produced Ayman Zawahiri, the number two of Al-Qaeda, had taken over this town and declared an Islamic state there, a little mini caliphate. And so I decided, and a Reuters reporter accompanied me, to go down and have a look. We took a couple of photographers with us, a Frenchman and an Egyptian. And we get to the edge of this town, and we are taken to see the military governor. Egypt is divided into governorates. And he says, if you guys go in there, I am not responsible for you. And so being, you know, daring, bright young journalists, we didn't take his warning seriously, and we went in. So we go into town, it's Friday afternoon, all the mosques are blaring with Friday prayers. And we're on the main street there near the main square. And the Egyptian photographer, who speaks, you know, obviously fluent Egyptian Arabic, says, I don't like what I'm hearing
mm-hmm.
from the mosques. We got to get off this street right now. And just like that, hundreds of men come pouring out of the mosques looking for Coptic Christians to beat up, harm. So we went into this apartment building, up on the roof, trying to get out of danger. And somehow the Jamaa Ismailia guys found out we were there. They came up, grabbed us, threw us downstairs, got roughed up in an alleyway, and sort of took us captive. And it didn't seem like it was going to end well. And after a few hours, they said, come with us. And they sat us at this folding table in the dusty square with a bunch of really hard-looking guys. And these guys proceeded to give us an interview. And these guys had been to Afghanistan to fight the Russians. And they had met and worked with this guy they called the Emir, the Emir, the Emir. Mm-hmm. And they were part of a new group that really didn't even have a name yet. And this new group was going to come and destroy the West. Now, who was the Emir? It was Osama bin Laden. And the group they were talking about was Al-Qaeda. And I had this all on tape in the 1980s before Al-Qaeda was really... And I wrote an article about it that really got picked up around the world, and it caused a lot of problems in Egypt. I had the tapes, and the Egyptian government, more importantly, the Egyptian security service, who I've written about on numerous occasions, right, wanted those tapes, and they made my life miserable. So when I write about Arab security services and some of the abuses that they have engaged in over the years, especially the Egyptians, very cruel service, I have firsthand knowledge about the kinds of things that they do.
When you were reporting on this, and this is in the mid to late 80s,
yeah,
and then by the...
When dinosaurs roamed the earth. I mean, it's been 20 years since I've committed an act of journalism.
But then, 10 years later or so, you're writing novels. And I can only think that, and I believe you have said this, that was the ultimate career goal. That's what you wanted to do.
Absolutely. And I was not someone who had the good fortune to be born into a family where I could take my degree in English and then spend 5 years working on my first novel. I had to go out in the world and make a living. And I thought journalism was the way to do it. So I studied journalism, political science, and then did graduate work in international relations. And it was a good education and a good career choice because it gave me fantastic training in the art of storytelling. Being a wire service reporter for a service that was known as the Writers Wire Service back in those days, gave me a lot of practice, and I obviously had a lot of good experiences that I was able to draw on later. But I always wanted to be a writer, and when I was in Cairo, I was just constantly making notes and keeping a journal and thinking about writing little short stories, just getting ready for it. And it was not until I was in my early 30s that I told my wife what my ultimate goal was. She didn't know about this, and I started writing. She said, oh, okay. She laughed. You know, she laughed for a while and said, oh, okay, honey, and you go ahead and write your book. And so I did.
I want to talk about this book specifically, but I am interested in, and perhaps this is cliched, but I think it's true in your case, where because of that love and writing down those stories in Egypt, you seem to have a fondness for it, and it becomes very much a character in your work.
I have a deep fondness for Egypt. When I lived there, I mean, obviously friends with the Western reporters, and you know, we'd all get together and have dinner and, you know, share our terrible stories about how sick we were all the time. And we really were sick all the time living mm-hmm. in Egypt. But mainly what I did is I would every night go out with my Sudanese office man, and we would go out into the worst parts of town to go play backgammon in the clubs and hang out in the mosques. And I got a deep love and understanding for the place, and was just sort of heartbroken as a result of 9/11, that because Al-Qaeda is a much more of an Egyptian organization than people really understood. Yeah, it was led by a Saudi, and yes, most of the hijackers of 9/11 were Saudis, but Mohammed Atta was an Egyptian, and many of the foot soldiers in Al-Qaeda were Egyptian. They came out of the movement that I met in El Minya in the late 80s. One of the guys who I interviewed, by the way, was the little brother of the blind sheikh who did the World Trade Center a couple of years later.
Daniel Silva is our guest. The new novel is The Black Widow. So when you have the idea that you want to write about ISIS and you want to look more into this, how do you decide that you're going to bring this world and the characters that you have created into it?
I think that it's necessary to make the story as accessible as possible. I saw Europe as sort of the gateway, and saw, you know, so many European Muslims being lured by the siren song of ISIS. It was rather easy for me to take reality and construct the bones of my story around it, and to draw on the fact that ISIS really communicates completely in the dark. We have difficulty picking up even the most basic communications from them, because they use all of the technology that we use. Telegram, what's up, WhatsApp, whatever, however you pronounce it. Snapchat. I was having a dinner coincidentally with an executive from Snapchat last week in New York. This is an app that you send a photograph or a text. It appears on the end user's screen for 1 second. You can set it for 1 second, then it's gone forever. And it has end-to-end encryption. So I said, has the NSA been out to your shop to talk to you guys about saving some of this stuff or having some way to monitor what's going on? And the executive didn't answer the question. But so it seemed to me that, and I've heard this from professionals, you know, we've got to get some human intelligence. We've got to, on ISIS, and get inside their networks, because the way they're communicating has left us deaf and blind. And so I took the real thing. I took that. I took the flow of foreign fighters from Europe to the caliphate. I took the fact that many of those Europeans are women, mm-hmm. who are being lured into going there. And I blended all that, and the result is the Black Widow.
So there is the fictitious attack in the novel.
Right.
And the French intelligence agents are concerned that more attacks are coming. So,
and rightly so.
And rightly so. So they go to Gabriel Allon, yeah. Our hero.
Yeah, well, they there's a tiny bit more to it than that I don't want to spoil on the radio.
Right.
In the real world, after the Paris attacks, you know, the French president and his ministers issued many stern statements of outrage. They bombed a few targets in Raqqa, and in my novel, they did something much more sensible. They came for Gabriel Allon, and so what they need help in doing is getting inside the network and smashing it to pieces, and you've really got to do that. I'm a firm believer that if we sit back here, mm-hmm. and try to defend every target, like this gathering tonight, or every airport. We got news today that the Brazilian government arrested 10 guys who were plotting attacks during the Olympics. Looks like it emanated from the tri-border region, which is a hellhole. And that makes a lot of sense to me. If we sit here and try to defend ourselves, we're going to get hurt. We are. We've got to be out there proactively breaking up these plots, smashing up these networks, killing these terrorists. I hate to say it, but I live in the real world. I'm the president of the real world. So I'm going to say it might be a forever war. I mean, it's a generational war until this illness, this fever breaks. And you know, the Israelis have been doing this. The French have very good services, but they're overwhelmed. They're absolutely overwhelmed. They cannot watch everybody all the time. I expected that this guy who drove the truck through the crowd at Nice probably had an S-file, as they call it, mm-hmm. And that they had just dropped him from their watch list. That did not turn out to be the case. He was unknown to them. But the Charlie Hebdo attackers, these guys had S-files. They were known to have extremist connections. They were known to have traveled outside the country to back to the region, and the French government cannot watch everyone all the time. And guess what? Neither can the FBI. Mateen in Orlando, I think it was twice he was investigated, mm-hmm. and they crossed him off the list, and they said sayonara, and they let him go. We live in a free country. We don't imprison people for thinking bad thoughts, but he slipped between the cracks and we got hurt.
When it comes to the character of Gabriel Alon, the backstory I'm very much interested in, because this is a character that I remember you telling me you had no intention of making a series character, but he became
here
a series.
Here we are.
So what was it about, and my understanding was that you were originally concerned, or your thought was, is that an Israeli character would not become a character that could be a number one New York Times best-selling character.
You know what? I was obviously proven wrong. I think this is my eighth number one with Gabriel. But I really was. I thought that there was too much anti-Israeli sentiment in the world, and boy, there really is, and it's growing, that there was too much anti-Semitism in the world to ever allow an Israeli character to be truly a true mass market character. And I argued vociferously that point with a very smart publishing executive, Phyllis Grant, a legend. She said, "You're wrong, write it." And I wrote the second one. It sold more than the first one. It's kind of odd to think about it now, but The Confessor is sort of considered a little bit of a minor classic. The Wall Street Journal put it on its list of, you know, five best thrillers of all time. When I first conceived it, it was not supposed to be a Gabriel Alon novel. But after I finished that book, I felt like I had a series. And here we are. The series goes on. And no one is more surprised that it has succeeded to the level that it has than the author who created him, because I never, ever imagined it.
There are many authors who are in a similar position to you, and they have multiple series, they have multiple protagonists, they have different things. Sometimes they weave together, sometimes they don't. Is that anything that ever attracted you?
Absolutely. We don't need to discuss my age in this gathering. You can find out how old I am in about 2 seconds.
They're Googling it now.
But I feel that I may be at the halfway point of my career, maybe. And I got a long way to go. I don't smoke or drink. I'm in very good health. I'm going to be around for a while. And I think it's safe to say that I'm not going to write Gabriel Alon forever. I think it is also, one should bear in mind that the sales of the Gabriel Alon series look rather like Al Gore's hockey stick graph in the movie, because they on this book they did, went literally straight up. And so only someone who is pathologically stupid or clinically insane would stop writing a series like that. And so I feel that the best way for me to write other material, and let's be honest, I mean, I would like to write other material, is to write 2 books a year. It's hard to say, but I think that could happen sooner than one might expect.
Because I've always suspected that there's some people, we're not going to mention any names, there's some people who write 4, 5, 8, 12, 75 books a year, and they may not be written by that person.
Right. I would not do it that way. And you know,
it becomes a brand.
Right. That's not what I'm interested in doing. People always ask me, what do you have in common with your character? The truth is, not much. But there are little things that I've dropped into the series that I say things about myself through Gabriel. And one of the things Gabriel and I have in common is that we prefer to work slowly. But when necessary, Gabriel is the swiftest of painters. I mean, he can forge a Van Gogh in an afternoon. And I am the swiftest of writers when I want to be. I mean, I come from a wire service background. I used to be able to dictate a 700-word story off my notepad over the phone. And so anything that had my name on it would be written by me.
What a novel.
And plus, I have a rather distinct style. Yeah. And so it would show up pretty. It would be pretty glaring if I didn't write it.
Daniel Silva's new book is The Black Widow. It is published by Harper. What a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our program. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. This off-the-shelf edition was recorded in Manchester Center, Vermont, in partnership with the Northshire Bookstore, northshire.com. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.